From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. CBS has fired radio shock jock Don Imus. Last Wednesday, he sat down as usual to broadcast his show Imus in the Morning. Before signing off, the 30-year radio veteran referred to the Rutgers women's basketball team as nappy-headed hoes. Now, we followed this story closely here at News and Notes. All week at our daily editorial meetings, we've debated how and how much we should cover the story. Some of us felt Imus fatigue, and I'm sure many of you felt that. Others thought this story needed fresh angles and new telling. Yesterday, Don Imus got the hook. He's lost not just his video simulcast at MSNBC, as previously announced, but also his CBS radio show. So we here at News and Notes decided to do something a little different on the issue. Later in the show, you'll hear an accountant's take on tax time, the next installment in our Minding Your Money series. But right now, we bring you our roundtable guest. We'll take a fresh look at the Imus story and how we deal with race on The Real. Joining me are Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and Joe Davidson, an editor at The Washington Post, plus Nat Irvin, professor of future studies at Wake Forest University and columnist for the Winston-Salem Journal. Welcome, everybody. And this is it. Love him or hate him, Don Imus is out of a job. Now, Joe, Imus has been fired. You're in the media. I'm in the media. We're all here on the radio. Now what? What's been accomplished for, say, journalism, let alone race relations?
Well, for journalism, I think one of the things that's that this incident and incidents of this type accomplish is a broader and perhaps more in-depth discussion of race in America. Race is the hot button issue that we all have such trouble discussing openly between the races with any kind of depth and insight, I think. I think when these kinds of situations come up, however, it does encourage that discussion. It doesn't always go much beyond the superficial, I'm still afraid. But nonetheless, it does encourage, I think, an honest discussion of race in America in the media and among individuals.
Mary, Imus moved up his meeting with the Rutgers women's basketball team to last night at the New Jersey governor's mansion. It lasted 3 hours. Unfortunately, the governor got into what sounds like a really pretty rough car accident and wasn't able to make it. Afterwards, according to the Associated Press, C. Vivian Stringer, the team's coach, spoke briefly on the mansion steps. "We had a very productive meeting," she said. "We were able to really dialogue. Hopefully, we can put all of this behind us." But the AP went on to note she did not say if the team forgave him for the remarks. We on News and Notes have also talked about this concept of forgiveness. When is an apology sincere? How do you go about the process of forgiveness? What needs to happen here? And should the team be automatically saying, "Oh, I forgive you," or should they take some time for themselves?
The team should just move on. But I wanted to say for journalists what this all means. Your first question, one of the things is it's the coming of age of black journalists and black folks who are in the media. One of the big influences on the decision that was made by NBC and CBS was the presence, unlike years ago, of people who are in the media who are African Americans and other people of color who were disturbed by this. The National Association of Black Journalists was instrumental in the beginning. We still don't have enough people in there, but if we didn't have that diversity, that was one factor. As far as the Rutgers team is concerned, I think they should move on. I think that they should accept his apology. I'm in favor of, you know, redemption and apologies and all that sort of thing. And once one has made it, as far as the personal is concerned and as far as their lives are concerned, they should be encouraged to move on from this and not to dwell on it. And Imus, I believe, will be back anyway. He'll be back in the media somewhere. But whether his apology is sincere or not, you can never know whether anyone is sincere or not.
Nat, let's follow up on what Mary was saying about this influence in the media, that although African Americans are not equally represented in whether it's the corporate side or the on-air side or the columnist side, there still are people there. But what specifically about the money issue, about corporate sponsors? MSNBC, when it dropped its simulcast, said, oh, it wasn't because of the money. But we all know money talks. And is it a situation now where companies just can't abide being seen as associating with people who are viewed as racist?
Well, clearly that's the case, Farah. I think that money had certainly something to do with it. But I also think there was a larger point here, and that is that America, the identity of America, has changed. You know, reading Bob Herbert's piece yesterday in the New York Times, in which he was reflecting back on the 60 Minutes interview that Mike Wallace did with Don Imus, in which Imus has to admit that he had hired a producer, Bernard McGuirk, to actually to tell, quote, in jokes, and actually Imus had to admit that he had actually used the term, the N-word, in describing what he wanted McGuirk to do. You know, that's a position that is, you know, that puts any network in an untenable position. And the other thing is this, that the statue of Imus had moved from being this comic, this kind of shock jock, to actually being in the intersection of major political news in this country. And you can't have that kind of nexus with the rest of, you know, the political and social and economic establishment of this country and then be associated with racist comments. Come on, you got to be kidding. I think that Imus, this whole debate about where Imus is and what this means about race, is coming to grips with the identity of America that has changed. We have, as Mary mentioned about the number of black journalists that we have now, we don't have nearly enough, but we're starting to have the mathematical representation of people of color in a wider distribution of places. And as we go forward, you're going to notice that the new identity of America is going to raise its voices louder, and the public space is not going to be the same as it used to be.
You know, I agree with that, but if I could just add, while I agree with that basically, I also think that the fact that Imus was on the air for as long as he was and saying the kinds of things that he did for as long as he did, that too says something about America. And it says that America has not changed as much as perhaps his firing indicates. I think clearly the firing says something about what America will and will not tolerate. But his longevity on the air with the kinds of things he has said repeatedly also says something about what America will tolerate.
And it's also true for Rad that it's also true for Rad that the fact that, as I said, he will bounce up somewhere else, whether it's on Sirius or XM or someplace, tells us about, and the fact that there are all these shock jocks and comedians who do the same thing, tells us something about America, as well as the fact that the kind of stuff we do, or our folks do in rap music, all of this tells us something about America and the still potent impact of questions of race. But it's also, you have to mention, you ask about the corporate side. If there had been no Ken Chenault ever at Amex, American Express, none of the folks who are black who got there, maybe, you know, this would have been different on the corporate side, and the diversity in the population, which has changed, the customers, the clients, all of this has changed in this country. It hasn't changed enough, but I'm sure that all of this had an impact.
You know, one other thing that I think this incident exposes is the degree to which not just America, generally speaking, but Democratic politicians would go to Imus in order to reach independent white male voters in particular. The LA Times has an interesting article on that this morning, talking about how Harold Ford, formerly a black member of Congress, really helped his campaign for Senate in Tennessee last year by going on the Imus show. That gave him credibility with a segment of the Tennessee electorate, specifically white male voters.
And at the same time, I have to add, I was in the room when Imus hosted the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Now, there's a long right. tradition of having controversial comics there, but it wasn't exactly as if people didn't know what he said. There's totally a feedback loop between shows that could be considered outrageous, and I'm not just talking about Imus's now canceled shows, but also between politicians and other people who need those audiences. So we're getting ready to wrap up, but we're going to be back with you guys. But before we let you go here, what needs to happen now in terms of holding the media accountable for who gets funding to be on the air, what standards they need to be up to, or is it just up to the market to decide? Very briefly, each of you, starting with Mary.
It's market-driven. It will continue to be market-driven. And who they can get on the air. No Democratic politician was going to touch being on the Imus show again after all this has happened. But it's going to be market-driven and what the public wants and what the public perceives that it needs and will pay for.
I agree, but I also think that the market will be definitely influenced by this, and I think people who are inclined, companies that are inclined to advertise on shock jock programs such as the Imus program will be much more wary about that in the future. And also I think that organizations like NABJ, which Mary mentioned earlier and which I'm a proud member, particularly proud today, will have to increase the vigilance. Those organizations will have to increase basically their oversight over this kind of these kinds of situations.
Finally,
well, I just think that we have to be this. You know, with Imus is gone, but I have mixed feelings about how this was done. I still think free speech is a very important part of our democracy, and I think the marketplace has to play a role. I think the diversity of opinions is the key thing that I'm looking for, and the more of a greater representation of non-white people in the media. Seems to me that's a critical aspect of how to shape what ought to be the identity of America and what we talk about, what we think, what our values are. I'm not quite sure that I'm happy with the way that this is unfolded right now with Imus.
And I'm not either.
We're going to have to wrap it up right now, but we are going to be back. We are going to take a quick break. Leave them wanting more. When we come back, Imus and the larger implications of dealing with race, more with Mary Frances Berry, Joe Davidson, and Nat Irvin.